Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by two very special friends, Shelley Brisbane from Parallel and Julia Scott of Make Do. And we're just going to talk about the coronavirus thing. I know we want to have like fun and talk about computers and art and design and all this stuff, but it's affecting people. And I thought that maybe we could kind of talk about where we are. We'll just have a little a group therapy between the three of us. How does that sound?
As good as it's going to get.
So Shelley, let's start with you. So you work in journalism. You're down in Texas doing awesome work. Kind of what's the lay of the land and has it affected your work at this point?
Yes, yes, and yes. I work for a radio show, and one of the things that we do is cover statewide news, and then we are part of a radio station that's covering local news. So in addition to whatever may be going on in our lives or in the way we do our work, we're also having to cover the event. Like, I was just reading through the list of stories, and the most recent one is HEB, which is a big grocery chain down here, is replenishing all the things that they were running out of. Also, the president of the university to which our station is attached, his wife has just tested positive. So many things going on, so many. And then personally, the station is essentially asking most of us to work from home, those of us who aren't literally having to be in the studio on air at that given moment, which is easy for me. The working from home part is, and I've done that. It's funny because I took this job about 3 years ago, having been a freelancer for many, many years. I am probably as well equipped to work at home as any person who has a regular job. And so that's not even the issue, although I'm already sort of feeling separation from my colleagues. We're all on Slack and we text each other, but I've been away from work for a few days, which I can talk about in a little while, but I'm feeling already that sort of disconnect from people you see on a daily basis and people that you need to interact with, both from a work point of view and just from a personal, hey, how you holding up point of view.
What about you, Julia?
I work from home. I'm a journalist. I'm a potter. So I think kind of the same. Like, I haven't noticed much of a difference in that sense, except for the fact that my husband's been working from home for most of the week. So I'm like, wait, I have to pretend to eat a real lunch in the middle of the day. But it's been kind of nice. And I want to recommend something that he discovered, was that after he'd had a sort of video conference with one or two of his coworkers, she left her camera, or like the chat on, while she went to do something, which meant that he still got the positives of like somebody walking past in the hallway as if he was in the office and just like catching up on things. So I thought that was kind of nice.
Oh, I like it.
Because like my day to day doesn't feel different, but pretty much all of the markets that I either had already booked or was planning to go to sell my pottery this spring have all been canceled, which I agree with the cancellation, but that means that a very not insignificant portion of my income for the first half of the year and maybe the entire year is just wiped out. And that's something that's true for a lot of, you know, small makers, artists, small businesses in general. If you can't sell your stuff, and if you're also like at a specific place at a specific time, it's hard. And like for me, I'm lucky in that I hadn't like prepared, you know, a ton of stock, like people going to different like comic cons and stuff around the US. I know that's been a huge thing, but also I know that, you know, the I don't know if you know this, but journalism has been having a tough time for a while,
just a
tad. And so I'm also very aware that this may also mean that a lot of the places that I work with in that respect will also probably not be, you know, looking for freelancers for a while. And I have a lot of friends who, I haven't published a book in a few years, but I used to do a lot of sort of author visits. And for a lot of writers, you know, you don't get rich writing books, but you can make a decent living, you know, going to libraries, going to different organizations and talking about your book. All of those things also canceled. So I'm generally kind of a positive person, and it may be because I don't understand the scope of things, maybe. But right now I'm kind of in this weird like emotional existential crisis limbo where I'm also like, at least it was sunny today. I don't know. How are you, Stephen?
Sort of personally, I work at home as well, but my kids are now off school for 2 weeks. My wife's a teacher, so she's home as well, which is nice. You know, at least here in the States, it's not bananas yet. Today, Friday, March 13th, depending on when you're listening to this, it may be bananas outside. But what I keep thinking about is just, you know, the impact this is going to have on people who are going to be more affected by it than just, oh, I got to work at home for a couple weeks. You know, it's the kids who rely on public schools for their meals. It's, you know, the elderly population that seems to be more at risk of complications from this disease. And, you know, I've got, just like everybody, have family members that I worry about, that if they come across this, it could be really bad. And I think just the uncertainty of that, I mean, everything feels so uncertain. That's really stressful for me. I'm one who, it won't come as a surprise to anyone I work with, I don't love surprises. You know, I don't love uncertainty. I like things to be what we expect them to be. And this has been a really powerful reminder for me that that's not really how the world works. And, you know, yeah, it's not really impacting, you know, me or my family at this point super directly, but just the angst that it puts over like the whole world, I find very, like, very difficult to wrestle with, honestly.
Yeah, I two things. One positive thing, I've seen a lot of school districts that have gone out and said that we're still going to provide at least one meal, maybe breakfast and lunch, to kids. You can come and pick it up, which I think is an amazing thing to do, because for certain kids, that is the meal that they're going to get. But I also agree, like, I have, you know, family members who are immunocompromised or have different comorbidities. And the thing is, I'm also kind of afraid for myself because I have asthma, I have a crappy immune system and crappy airways, and I tend to get things on the lungs. And I had a little existential crisis about that yesterday too, because I made the mistake of reading an interview with this principal who'd been on a school trip to Italy and got hit really, really bad. And almost, you know, they sent a priest to do last rites. And just the description of how that was, you know, I don't want to exaggerate that, like, this was a severe trauma and a severe trigger, but it did bring back some sort of sense memory of what it is like to not be able to breathe like that. Of course, screwed down quite a bit from what I think he was going through. You know, I live in a country, I live in Sweden, which has, you know, socialized healthcare, and while it's not perfect and we're having our own problems, I'm grateful that if I'm going to need care, that's not going to ruin me and my family. But I am also, you know, I have a cough today, and I don't know if it's allergies or a cold or something else. And I've decided that it's pollen. I'm just going to stick with that. But, you know, I've already been quarantining myself for this week. But I feel kind of silly, you know, being like, oh, woe is me. I'm a healthy 37-year-old who might get hit bad. But it's also really hard to not go there, you know?
I think the uncertainty and not knowing how to feel is getting to me, because I told somebody the other day, I'm constitutionally incapable of panicking. I'm sure there are things that would make me panic, but I feel like my brain can wrap itself around, okay, these are the public health things that I have been told that I'm able to do, because again, I come from a place of great privilege. Not only do I have a job that I can do at home, I have a job that I'm pretty sure I'm going to get to keep. I have a supportive family. I have a house where I can comfortably be and probably access to the things I need. But at the same time, this news keeps changing every day. So it was declared a pandemic on Wednesday, and 100 things have happened since then, both locally and not locally. And so I'm struggling with how to feel, like trying to sort of remain calm and remain sensible. And also, I'm kind of a snarky person, so I've been making jokes, and I also want to make fun of overreaction, but I don't know what overreaction is. I don't know what the right thing to say and feel is. My mother is older, and I spoke to her this morning and said, you know, what can we help. We need to make sure you're on the grocery delivery service, or that your staple needs are online so that we can pick them up for you at the store and bring them to you, whatever you need, because she's not able to drive, and which is kind of good in this situation because she shouldn't be getting out. But let us take you on a drive Sunday so you can get out of your house. And she had said, she had talked to my sister, who said, oh, well, this whole thing is overblown. And I reacted viscerally to that because I was like, I felt like my sister was doing a thing that I'm kind of tempted to do, which is to belittle something, limit something's impact on me so that I can sort of maintain my equilibrium. And I'm in a different place than that. I'm like, all right, what surprises await next? I mean, I'm really concerned about how the response is being, you know, rolled out, what's going to happen when we get to the point that there are more cases than our medical system, such as it is, can handle. And again, I'm not sure how to feel. I'm not sure if my snarky little jokes have a place, or if I should be, if being sort of circumspect and not panicky is helping me or anyone else. Or, I mean, I just, not knowing how to feel is sort of frustrating for me, because I think in most cases when there have been, say, financial downturns, or the stock market has turned bad, or other financial crisis, whatever, things like that that happen, I usually sort of know how to feel, whether it's, okay, this is something I can solve, this is something I can work on, or there's nothing I can do, there's no point in being panicky. But I'm at the point right now where, like, I don't know.
I think we're kind of in this weird sort of liminal in-between, like, Schrodinger's pandemic place where, like, I think also, you know, large parts of the West, we haven't started to see the worst of it. And so it's not like, oh, you know, there was an earthquake or the power went, and you're like, this is what we're dealing with. We're in this weird space of trying to prevent and handle something that we don't quite know where it's going to go yet. And I'm fully expecting that if we manage to turn it around, people are then going to say that all of those things that we did were unnecessary because it turned out okay. Kind of like how people say mm-hmm. that you don't need to get vaccinated because nobody gets measles anymore. And you're like, do you know why nobody gets measles anymore? No, but it's like, it's very unreal. We're in this state of sort of suspended reality almost, where it's really hard to take things seriously when it's so much about preparing and preventing, and not like, okay, this is what happened. Right now, your basement has flooded. You need to get the boxes out of there. You know, like it's hard to
right.
kind of imagine, especially when you don't want to. Like you're saying, Shelley, I think where I saw a meme going around that was like, well, this is one of the times when it's really good to have generalized anxiety because you're already always preparing for the worst. So it can't get worse than that.
Yeah, I think that uncertainty on how to feel. I mean, everyone I've spoken to the last, you know, couple of weeks, that's really common. And I think it's okay. I think if we were in a situation like this and we sort of decide, you know, one way or another, this is how I feel about this, and that doesn't change or that doesn't evolve, then you're actually maybe not paying as close attention as you should. I think that as this evolves, our feelings are about it are going to change and evolve with it. And, you know, I think anyone out there listening, I think it's totally fine to feel that way, that you from day to day or week to week, that it does change, because this is a situation that, you know, most of us haven't really lived through before. And it's something that is scary and serious, but, you know, trying to find the right way to handle it and, you know, the right things to do, like, do I cancel this vacation or not, or whatever it may be. For a lot of it, there's not a clear right or wrong answer. And I think it's okay to kind of accept that.
I think the internet is so much a blessing and a curse right now, because on the one hand, you're reading all of the horrible news and all of the cases and things going wrong and feeling really scared and feeling confused, and misinformation can spread. But at the same time, you know, you get TikTok videos of how to wash your hands. And you can also hear all the great things that people are doing, like offering to buy food for their neighbors, or schools giving out food, even though they're closed. And I mean, part of me is also like, well, if we come out of this and people actually know to wash their thumbs properly, then at least that was something. I also sometimes have a tendency that is snarky. I apologize. But I'm not lying about the thumbs, though. That's important. Also, sneeze into your elbow, dear Lord.
I've done that. The thumb things, I need to look that up. No, there's a way in which being, and I, as I said, I haven't been working for the past few days, but I've been reading the news stories that we're filing, and there's a way in which I'm sure that being part of gathering and sharing the news is actually going to be helpful, because when you do that, especially, and I've learned this since taking a job at a daily show, I'd always done much sort of longer term things that didn't have such a quick deadline. But when you're on that quick a deadline, you don't really have time to do anything other than make sure that you're accurate and clearly communicating. There's not that time to think. And I've been through this a few times with disasters that have, like Hurricane Harvey and other things that have happened that have not affected me personally in any way, but that were still profound for us as an organization, for us as a state, for the people that, you know, our journalists are going and talking to people that are actually affected by this stuff, whether it be what's happening right now or whether it be what's happening with those disasters. And what I've learned from them is the sort of remove of, while you're gathering the news and assimilating it so that you can put something out that's clear and helpful, you at least are emotionally not as present, or you're not stewing in your own juices as much. And I think in that sense, it's helpful. Once you're done, that stuff is going to hit you in a way that you may not even expect. And that, again, that goes back to that uncertainty. I'm not sure at what point I'm going to be freaked out by something. It's not predictable. And that uncertainty is a problem. But I do like the feeling that how else am I going to contribute? I can't take lunches to older folks because I don't drive a vehicle, but I can help gather the news and make sure that what we put out is accurate and complete and focused locally on stuff that people care about where I live, which is kind of why I got into this business in the first place.
Yeah, it's been a while since I was in a newsroom during a big event, but like you, I've experienced quite a few, and it's kind of weird not being there because, you know, I have the privilege of turning off the news for a couple of hours if I want to, just like, I'm going to read a book and not read Twitter. But at the same time, there is something to be said for feeling sort of, you know, constructive or useful in trying to gather information and find stories and help and either like tamp down the anxiety or use that sort of obsessive fact-finding accuracy helping thing, having a very clear conduit for that, because now I can kind of feel like I'm just, you know, trying to correct people who are wrong on the internet one at a time. or if I'm lucky, you know, with 50 retweets. And that is really frustrating and having people around you who are doing the same thing, who are helping out.
Well, again, that's why it's so weird to not be with my colleagues, because we're on Slack all the time. And I've been off work for 3 days this week, and then I'm going back to it Monday, and I know what the protocols and are all in all are, but I haven't been as engaged in the conversation and the work as I will be next week. And it's helpful to have people around on Slack. But I think that's why I miss my colleagues so much. It's not so much that I need their personal interaction in my life every day. It's that I know we're engaged in something important. And usually when it's a big event, like an election, which is not a disaster, obviously, well, it can be, but usually not, or a hurricane or something like that, we're all almost literally in the same rowboat pulling in the same direction, and we can see the work that the other person is doing and gain strength from that. And so that's what's missing when you're trying to do something remotely. And we have the skeleton crew that has to be in the studio to go on air, but the rest of us, in fact, in order to go to my workplace, because I don't physically need to be there, they've closed down our building because we've had cases at the university. I have to ask my boss if I can come in, which is kind of weird. But so I'm hoping, and again, I haven't talked to them, but I do feel like some sort of casual interaction via video so that we can see each other's faces. And I like your idea of, like, you can see the space. I can see what's happening. My desk is very near the control room. And I would love to see that. I'd like to see them working and know that we're all kind of still pulling in the same rowboat in the same direction.
I think also, and this is both for you, Shelbin. This is both for you. My brain is. This is both for you, Shelley, and all journalisty people, and probably all people. Don't underestimate the need for decompression afterwards, like going over the game again, because I think it's very easy to think that you're a neutral observer, you're objective, and you're not affected. And I think that goes for a lot of people. You think that, like, you know, I'm cool, this is fine, fire room dog. But just to remember that there are resources, online or in person for, you're not ridiculous for having anxiety about this. Like, it's completely legitimate, and it's fine to ask for help. This is one of my, things that I come back to a lot. And one thing that occurred to me today that I think is important to share is a lot of support groups, they're very much close quarters. They are probably not where you want to be maybe right now, but they can also be really important in times of crisis and times of anxiety. So a lot of places like AA, NA, Al-Anon, all types of those support groups are almost always available in some form online. And there are a lot of other places where you can get, like, I'm not necessarily sure how I feel about, the online therapy services, but there are a lot of different ways that you can talk to someone who is not worried about the same people you are, at least,
Yeah. And there are groups out there that are specific to journalists. They're usually focused on people who have been in very stressful situations physically, like combat and that sort of thing. But there are also people who work with folks who have been in stressful newsrooms on a day in, day out basis. And you're right. And I think that's what I was getting to earlier, that once the situation has become less of an imminent coverage opportunity, I think not only will we need to decompress, but the way we're affected is going to be unexpected and unpredictable. It's not, well, I've turned off the Slack, I'm not covering news, it's the weekend, now it's time to feel anxiety. Well, it's probably not going to work that way, and it might come out in a way that we might not expect or recognize, in terms of the relationships that we have in our personal lives. And so it does feel like it's important to kind of recognize, oh yeah, this thing that's happening to me that's unusual is probably a delayed reaction to the stress I've experienced in my And again, I say I come from I am in a position of great privilege relative to people whose livelihoods are affected and to journalists who are physically going out into the field and putting themselves at risk. And I feel like recognizing that privilege, but also acknowledging that there is stress there is the way I keep balance,
Can I ask, Stephen, and you don't have to answer and you can cut this out if you want, I don't have kids. How are you talking to your kids about it? Because they're, of an age where they pick up things, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, how do you, A, just how do you talk to them about it? And B, how do you talk to them without, yourself feeling like, and, this happens with a lot of big disasters, like feeling like, why do my kids need to know that bad things happen? But
sure.
How do you?
Yeah.
It's
tough, right? So my kids are 5, 9, and 11. And
I love parents of multiple kids who are like, there's the big one. What's his name?
Yeah.
What's his name?
There's that
middle one. And the little one.
who had a birthday last?
I'm one of five, so.
Yeah, see? Yeah, yeah. My mom was one of eight, so she just got forgotten, right? It's like, the other one, she's there. It is really hard because, so my kids are out of school, right? So they know their spring break just got doubled. And, our family is a little bit different, that our oldest has a cancer diagnosis. So we've had a lot of hard conversations with our kids. They understand, that people get sick and die and that sort of thing. So we have a baseline with them with that. But one thing that, we were told, very early on with our son was, when you're asked a question, you need to find a way to answer it in a way that's appropriate for their age, but you need to be truthful. Right. That they need to be able to trust that what you're saying is true, even if you've boiled it down because they're 10. And so for us, it's really been about, hey, there is this thing in the world and it's making a lot of people sick. And some of those sick people, are dying. But the good news is, we're doing everything we can to keep y'all safe and to keep the people around us safe. And thankfully, it doesn't seem to affect kids that much. And so that's good news. And, we're just going to kind of make the best of this time where we're together for 2 weeks. And that's pretty much answered their questions. And, again, I don't know if that's the right or wrong way to do it. It's how we've handled it and it works well for our kids. It's going to be different for everybody a little bit. But the thing, the advice I always give is you need to be truthful, even if it means, even if you are reducing things down, you know, you're getting on their level, you don't need to lie to them.
I mean, I want someone to explain it in a comforting way that's appropriate to my age level, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So do I. Like, I'm in my mid-30s, right? Like, someone to explain it to me. But I want my kids to be able to trust that the answer I give them is truthful. Now, we are doing some things, right? So we are they don't get a lot of media time anyways. But, you know, one thing we do sometimes is, like, let the HomePod play us the news. Like, okay, we're not probably going to do that right now because it's like, you know, 2,000 people died in Italy today. It's like, oh my God, like I don't want them to hear that, you know? And so we've made some adjustments around that sort of thing. But I don't think they're super stressed about it at this point, which I'm thankful for. But yeah, it's a good question. It's something, you know, it's something to consider. But, you know, sort of a light question is, you know, how do you talk to family members who are elderly and who may be susceptible to it? Like, what can you implement safeguards around them? Like, that's really hard too. And we all have that in our family as well. And so everyone, like, so I want to talk to you about this because it does affect like every human being, not only like on the emotional end, but also like in the sort of this, the logistical life end, because we all have those people in our lives who we need to talk to about it. And unfortunately we live in a world with a lot of tragedy. And so we've all had a lot of practice at this, but this does feel different somehow and sort of scarier somehow because it's worldwide.
And again, because it's so kind of vague that certain people, and I mean, me too, intellectually, I'm like, yes, you know, containment, wash your hands. And then part of me is like, because it's so hard to take in and it's so big. And I think my husband talked to his parents today and kind of had to, because, you know, they're like, you know, is it such a big deal? You know, all that. And kind of had to play some sort of like, not moral philosophy, but like logical philosophy game of like, okay, so you agree that A, and you agree that B, then can you maybe agree that also C follows? Because it is kind of, I read this really interesting article that a lot of the, let's call them the generation of the 50s rather than the B word, they see their parents, who in some cases are alive, as the elderly. They don't realize that, you know, a lot of the boomer generation are, you know, over 60, over 70. Mm-hmm. But they're like, well, we have to, you know, it's important to for the elderly to be careful. And you're like, I have some news for you, mother dearest. You are the elderly. And you know, that they want to help out, you know, people in their community who need help and maybe don't realize that they should not either be exposing themselves to risk or bringing germs to the people that they are trying to help. You know, a lot of retirees try to do good things. And I lost my train of thought, but basically, yeah, it's also hard to find an age-appropriate level to talk to your 60-something, 70-something parents. And it's weird, too, because I've often had a conversation that, you know, again, I'm a millennial. My generation, for instance, didn't quite experience the AIDS crisis, the AIDS epidemic, and therefore maybe don't necessarily take protective measures as seriously as they should in that respect, because we didn't see, you know, our friends die. We didn't see that whole thing. But our parents did. They've seen epidemics. They've seen, you know, they probably, you know, my dad was born in 43. My mom was born in 52. They probably saw people who lived with the effects of polio, with like all these things that you're like, how do you not take this seriously now? You would think that people who have lived through the poop, like who've lived through a ton of things, would be like, you know, washing my hands, staying home for a while, not that bad. There are lots of World War II documentaries on Netflix. I'll be fine for 2 weeks.
I think there are two things about this. One thing, we all, I think, by instinct, want to find a reason to believe that it's not us. So, and I hate to say it, but I think for AIDS, a lot of people said, well, I'm not a high-risk population. And maybe they reached a point where they knew someone who was affected. But there are probably still a lot of people of that age that you could talk to who would say, perhaps not cruelly, perhaps would just say it's not something that I experienced viscerally or personally. And I think this, because, especially because there's such a long incubation period and because transmission is still, I think, a bit of a mystery to a lot of people, it's not a one-to-one relationship, there's going to be that rationalization of, I'm younger, I haven't been to China, I haven't done X, Y, and Z, and our brains want to find the reason that it's not going to affect us. And it's hard to know at what point. I mean, I mentioned the thing about the wife of the president of the university where I work testing positive. And for some reason, that jogged my brain a little bit. I don't know that woman. I've never heard of her. I've never heard her name before. But for some reason, it was a close enough connection that it perked my ears up. And I feel like for a lot of people, there's that. And the other thing I would say, because I have, my mother is older than that. She's in her 80s. For her, when I talked to her this morning, the thing I said that I think gave her the most comfort was just that I was trying to come up with a plan. Here's how we can get you groceries that you need. Here's how we can help you entertain, be entertained. Also, are you considering the fact that the neighbors that come and help you out, you know, by delivering groceries or taking you places, that those relationships might change and we might need to, you know, talk to you and to them about what to do. Just the fact that I was having those thoughts and calling her, and my mother is the sort of person who would say, you don't call me often enough, and she's probably right, that seemed to give her some reassurance. So sort of just being in touch with family and people that you care about and, you know, whatever you end up saying to them, their knowledge that you're thinking of their perspective is probably going to be helpful for a lot of people.
I've seen several people who have, in different ways, needed either help or suggestions or donations for people in care homes, like either for the elderly or for the sick, because you need things to do. You can't go outside. You can't, you know, maybe play board games because you don't want things that everyone is touching. And one thing that I, for some reason, thought of and recommended to one of them that they appreciated was, you know, maybe like ask them about stories and things that have happened in their lives and record those, because you can share those with other people. And I'm kind of wondering if maybe this is definitely the time to ask our parents and grandparents about, like, what was a weird, not martial law situation, but like a weird suspended time like this that you remember. My mom blogged about when, you know, hoarding things and the fact that you could never get anything in the Soviet Union, so you get used to making do. And she also sort of threw me under the bus, because when I was 3 years old in Moscow, I didn't understand that the sandpaper in the public bathroom was actually toilet paper. Not literal sandpaper, but, you know, the quality was not there. So this sort of weak Western child who just like was like, Mommy, where's the toilet paper? And I think that there's, if we're going to be positive about, you know, the stubborn older generation, they're also stubborn because they've made it this far, I guess. But that also means that they've seen a lot of weird things. And maybe that's also a knowledge to find. Like, maybe you don't need to record them talking about how you can make toilet paper from bark. But, you know, they could probably make a really good meal out of the three ingredients that you have in your cupboard. I don't know. I'm starting to turn into a weird morning show host. I apologize. Talk to your elderly. Isn't there a service like that that was advertised on a bunch of podcasts where they, like, they would send question prompts for your older family members and they can record it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Story something. Worth. Yes. And yeah. I think...
Well, and then there are, and we do it on our show too. We go out and record segments of people with interesting lives that writ large. It could be everything from, here's this amazing life I've had, to here's a story. And in fact, your idea, it reminds me, one of our reporters is an expert at this. She will find anybody and coax a story out of them. And I'm trying to learn from her. And we do a couple of minute segments, which are nice breaks when you have a heavy news day. And then you do a story about a guy's relationship with his cowboy boots or, you know, how, yeah, so
Texas.
Yeah, and I may turn this into actual content.
You're welcome. No, but I mean, like, don't you know, put it out there as before you die, I want to know about the war. But
no,
just
no,
like,
no, of course
but it's
not.
I think it's a good activity to have, because it doesn't require touching. It doesn't require going anywhere. Like, you could even, like, over the phone, ask someone to tell you a story and record it. Both because we lose a lot of stories when people either die or because nobody asks the right question. but it's something that you can easily help someone out with, to go, you know, grandpa, tell me a story.
Well, and it's a distraction for them, right? Because you don't want to go over and just talk about, hey, how's your virus preparedness going? You know, let's talk about something after we maybe sit and watch a movie together and ask them a question that's a prompt that maybe for you is a more direct connection to what's happening now than for them. For them, it's just a memory of a time in their life.
Now we're all reflecting on our lives. What story would I tell? Yeah, I after reading that story about the principal, I'm morbid. I reminded my husband about what my thoughts on like life support and long term, what do you call it? Efforts are, just so he would know. So that wouldn't be something that would be on his mind if and when, fingers crossed, touch wood, it might come to that. So that's my goodbye tip. Tell people.
Oh boy. Well, you know, I think we've got some good stuff to think about. I really like the idea that to use this as an opportunity to connect with those around us in a way that's safe and responsible. But, you know, if we feel this way, our kids will feel this way, our parents will feel this way, and it's an opportunity to have some of those conversations that can be hard to have just out of the blue. So,
but at a distance of 6 feet.
Yeah, across the room or on iMessage.
My microphone windscreens have been dipped in isopropyl alcohol.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Both of you have taken some time. If you are out there listening to this, this is a show for Relay FM members. If you're not a member, you should go join at relay.fm/membership.
Because some of us won't make any money this year.
Yeah, that's right. So go support shows like Parallel and Make Do. It would mean a lot to us. Thank you each for joining us. And until next month, adios.
And wash your hands.
Including your thumbs.